back. You are listening to Punk Goes Pride. I am your host, Tate Logan, and today I have the pleasure of hanging out with the very lovely Maddie Singer. How are you today, Maddie?
I'm doing great.
What were you doing in Wisconsin? Just seeing friends or family? Or
Actually, I do something called anaplastology, which is I make artificial parts of the face for people with cancer and trauma, and I'm joining a national practice, and the guy who runs the national practice, his name is Greg Guion, and the name of the company is Medical Prosthetic Arts, and it's been around since the 80s. It's really fantastic, and I'm proud to say that I'm going to be an associate with the company, so I went to kind of meet with Greg personally and see him work in person and, of course, imbibe in the cheese and the beer.
The cheese and the beer, like saving, changing lives, also drinking beer. Wow. What a weekend.
It was actually fantastic. One of the greatest things about doing what I do is that you basically do art for a living, but you do art in such a way that you can improve people's lives by them wearing your art basically to feel better about themselves. It's you know, one of these wonderful professions where you have the advantage of using your art to help people. And Greg was so such an inspiration for me personally, seeing his art through the years, that got me to move from working in special effects makeup for so many years to ultimately taking the same skill set and bringing it to the anaplastology field.
That's so cool. That, like, I remember when you were telling me about this the first time, I didn't even know that that was something that existed. So, like, it's such a, like, niche and incredible thing that I can imagine that you literally make people's lives better with that sort of thing. So that's incredible.
Yeah. So just a little background. So I graduated NYU Film School in 1990, and it's quite a while ago. and interesting fun fact: my roommate in college was Adam Sandler. My freshman year.
Are you kidding me right now?
No, totally true.
100%. You just whip out the craziest fun facts.
Like, I know, kind of so crazy. Cool. Yeah. So when I first moved to in my dorm at NYU, I'm from Long Island, New York, and my parents came with me, and of course the first person who like bounded down the stairs was Adam, and that's how I met him. And then we shared a suite, and the suite was Adam and this guy named Tim Herlihy, who actually wrote The Wedding Singer and Happy Madison. Oh, wow. And a bunch of the other stuff that Adam worked on. They became like writing partners. And Tim actually ended up being a writer on SNL as well. And so when I graduated NYU, Adam was already in Los Angeles trying to make it. And he was doing comedy clubs. I used to go with him to comedy clubs all the time in New York when he was first starting out. And I got to hang out with Chris Rock and Colin Quinn and a lot of famous, you know, people and before they made it. And then when I moved out to L.A., Adam, you know, I went to go visit Adam, and in his building was Jim Carrey, who I met. And he had just got the job on In Living Color. And he was complaining.
No way.
Yeah, I swear this is a totally true story.
It's like you're just making this up as you go. Like, no way.
It's totally true, I swear. And I remember I remember we were sitting at Adam's apartment at the time. And this is like in North Hollywood. And Jim Carrey was complaining how like he was broke and he had a daughter to support and all this stuff. And he literally just got the job on In Living Color. So. And then shortly thereafter, Adam went to New York to try out for SNL. And actually, he wasn't hired as talent first. He was hired as a writer.
Oh, interesting.
So, and then ultimately, when he started appearing on SNL, he brought Tim on as a writer. And they were both writers on SNL. And that's kind of what happened. And, you know, we lost touch over time. I'm sure if I saw him today, well, first he'd be surprised. and then secondly, you know, he would be like, hey, oh my God, you know, so we didn't end badly or anything. It was just like, you know, people grow and move apart or whatever. So,
yeah, no, of course. So how did you get into special effects when you were going to film school? Was that kind of something that you wanted to do, or did it just kind of like end up that way? Like, what was your passion when you started school, and then how did you get into doing special effects?
Okay. So, you know, there were no such thing as special effects classes back in those days. Right. When I was really young, my parents were watching the movie, the original Planet of the Apes on television, on like the movie of the week. You know, this is before cable.
You all have to gather around. Yeah.
Right. And I was just like, and I remember I was a little kid. I was like, you know, seven. And I remember thinking, oh my God, what is that? Like, these people are definitely not really apes, but and really chimps, but they look amazing. And I became fascinated with the prosthetic technology that was involved in creating them. So much, in fact, that I was already a voracious reader at a very young age. My parents were not, they didn't really want kids. So my dad was, it's a whole other story. But
here's a book. Yeah.
So I was kind of treated as an adult really early. It's like, you could have anything you ever want to read. So I could go to the library whenever I wanted. I could order books. I could order magazines, as long as it was reading material. So I was very utilitarian in my reading. It had to be a how-to something. It was kind of how I came from them.
That's cool, yeah.
And so I ended up going to the library, and I would take out books on how to do makeup for, you know, film and television and for theater. And I found a book called Making Monsters, which was about different makeup artists in Hollywood. And one of them dealt with John Chambers, who did the special effects makeup for Planet of the Apes, and it had how he did it. And eventually I figured out how to do all this stuff, and I was doing it in high school.
Oh my gosh. So just like self-taught due to being passionate about it.
Yeah. And then, you know, at the time, that's how all makeup effects people started. They were all self-taught. And in college, there were no such thing as a course in special effects makeup. So what I did was I put ads around the university saying that I would do special effects for your movies for free. And I ended up working on all these kids' student films, like doing blood effects and makeup. And that was my learning. That's how I learned how to do it.
That is so sick.
Yeah. And then ultimately I worked on some stuff when I was in college, and then I moved out to Los Angeles, and the first movie I ever worked on was The Addams Family, the first Addams Family movie. And then the Leprechaun
movie. As someone that's super into horror, this is just like the coolest shit ever to me. Like I loved The Addams Family.
It's so still funny. Do. Yeah. So I worked on that and then, you know, I ended up having some success, and I worked on Species 2, The Bicentennial Man, Buffy, Angel, Stargate, X-Files. I really had a really fun career doing special effects makeup. And at that exact same time I was doing that, I was also pursuing my music, which I had done throughout high school and in college. And I had a band that was really happening at the same time. So it was kind of a combo. So I was living this like dual life of like doing special effects makeup, and then at night, like performing on the strip at the Roxy and the Whiskey and the Rainbow and the Troubadour. And it was an amazing time. And this was the 90s. And I was like this hot guy who was sort of, you know, femme looking. But at that time, all the guys looked femme. Right.
I was about to say, that was probably working in your favor. No kidding.
Well, that was the thing. I'd always dreamed of transitioning. And, you know, just for the record, you know, I wasn't gay. I identified as a straight male who was trans. I knew I was trans since I was six. So, I mean, like forever I knew I was trans, but like I didn't know what it was. You know, like,
oh, yeah.
It wasn't until I saw a special on CNN about, this guy in the military who was trans that I even knew it was a thing. And I remember seeing that in high school and like being afraid that I was watching it, like my parents were going to notice and say, what does that have to do with you? Because I was so paranoid they were going to figure it out, which is really weird. But like, you know, as a kid, you don't know. I thought everyone was going to figure it out. Did you think people were going to figure it out for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can remember the same thing. Like I grew up in the South. I had never met another trans person. I got to college and there was like a LGBT like club or whatever, and I met some other trans people, and I can remember like going home and like googling it. I was like, what, you know, what is being trans mean? And I remember reading it and like freaking out. I was like deleting my search history and shit. I was like, everyone's gonna know, they're gonna know. Like
that's so funny. I totally relate. And I remember I got to college and I kind of had a plan to grow my hair out, which I did. And that when I got to Los Angeles, I was going to pluck my eyebrows, which is like that song, you know, and he was a she. I said, hey, moves, Dave, yeah. Take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, right? Remember? And he was a she.
Yes.
And I was going to, you know, potentially transition in my 20s, but there wasn't the internet like it is today. And
yeah.
There wasn't that support, you know? So I didn't feel like I knew what to do. And
oh, yeah.
I was
scared. Yeah. 2015 so I can't even imagine, you know, that's wow.
So I just, you know, ended up dating, you know, women and continuing to look the way I did and look like a rocker, which I did. But this is a funny story. So there was a show on in the 90s called Studs. It was a game show.
Okay. And, I don't think I've heard of it.
Yeah. It was a very successful game show in the 90s. If you look it up on YouTube, you can see a bunch of different shows. I might actually be on one. And in the show, two guys would date three girls. And then they would have like stuff like, one look at my innie and we were firing up the futon. And you had to guess who said it. And then did, you got like a thing you put on your lap. And then whoever had the most wins of the questions would win a date with the person they picked.
Oh, okay.
So I actually won on Studs, just to show you how ridiculously that is.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Yes. Well, hey, it all works out in the end. Like we love a good character development moment. Like,
right. So yeah, it wasn't until much later that I transitioned, but you know, I was married to, at that time, I got married about 25 to this gorgeous actress, named Iva Franks. And she and I actually had a really successful marriage for a while. And as a matter of fact, she kind of knew about my gender dysphoria. I kind of told her. Yeah. And she, I mean, any girl that I dated knew that I had a strong feminine side.
Right.
You know, that wasn't something that I hid so much, but I think it was actually sexy to them. They liked that I was, you know, more feminine that way. And then I had to have an emotional attachment to have, you know, real sex with women, not just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, absolutely.
So I guess today we call it demi. So I'm kind of demisexual that way. You know, I needed to have that.
Yeah. It's cool. We've invented all sorts of good terms to help explain things now.
Right. And keeping up with them is hard.
No, for sure. I mean, just as someone that is younger, like I'm 26 and I've, you know, I had my own personal experience with coming out and transitioning and doing all of that. And it felt, you know, it was hard and it was rewarding at the same time, obviously. And especially now, like I do have the privilege of being able to get on the internet and connect with other people like me. But it's, you know, it's interesting that when, you know, when I first started doing it and people are like, oh, this is a phase or whatever. I'm like, people have felt this way since the dawn of time. Like, it's just, there are just words for it now and ways for us to interact with each other. And so, like, not to be corny, but you are so inspiring to me because it's just so cool to see that, like, you were brave. It doesn't matter at what point in your life you decide to make the jump for transition, like it's worth it. Like I can tell just talking to you and when we met and hearing you sing at karaoke, it's like you're such a confident woman and gives me hope for like the rest of my life and for generations to come after that. So I hope one day to be able to tell someone younger than me that like it's all worth it and everything. So
sweet to say. I remember when you told me that you were trans because I obviously had no idea and I was kind of blown away, you know, and you know, as a trans woman who sings, you know, I sing with my voice that I have now. And, you know, it's harder as a trans woman, unless you want to put on a voice, to completely be yourself. And I think that's the hardest part is like, I just want to be me. And I felt like doing a voice all the time seemed like, what was the point then? It's like, I've been pretending my whole life. Why am I going to pretend again? So,
yeah, I mean, it's whatever like works best for you. And when you have like an incredible singing voice, I'm sure it can be scary to think like, what if I can't, if I talk a certain way and then won't be able to perform the way that I want to? Like that totally makes sense to me.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that. So, you know, I went to a doctor. The doctor that I went to, I had bottom surgery. And, you know, I talked to him about options and things. And he said, you know, you can get your voice done now. You know, they have surgery for that. And I said, well, wouldn't it affect my singing voice? And he goes, oh, you sing? And I said, yeah. And he goes, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow.
So he says it 100% would affect your power of your voice. And like, if you've heard me sing, you know, my voice is very powerful, and that's part of my deal. So I was very nervous about singing, you know, because I mean, I'm pretty passable if you haven't heard me talk, you know, in lots of cases I can pass in like regular situations. Not that that's really critical. I don't think that's really super important, but it can be for safety and things like that. And so when you sing publicly with a voice that's clearly not feminine, you're outing yourself every time. So you have to be an extremely confident person to go, "Hey, I'm trans. Take it or leave it," you know?
Right. Well, I mean, and I've witnessed this firsthand, you singing, and it's like you come off and everyone is just so blown away by how good your voice is.
Aww.
That they, you know, they don't like, I mean, and again, I can't speak for every experience you've had, but just as someone that's been around and seen it, like people just immediately support what you're doing because they think you're so talented, which is really cool. So you're right. Like the confidence I think has a lot to do with it. I mean, even in those years where, at least for me, like while transition was still early, it was like, okay, I'm going to be confident the first time I get this shot in my ass. Like, I'm not going to wait a year and a half when I'm like fully transitioned or whatever to start being confident. And so there's that like kind of like limbo in between where it's like, no, you will respect me, you know? So I think that the energy you put out, I think is received well, like you and me or any trans person that's just like confident in who they are. I think that people can sense the confidence from a mile away, and that always works in our favor, I think.
Well, thanks. Well, you know, it's interesting. There's so many terms like associated with trans. You know, there's the term clocked. Do you know what that means? Obviously, you know what that means, right?
I don't think so, actually.
Okay, so if you clock somebody, that means you can tell they're trans.
Oh, that's fucked up.
You've been clocked. Well, that would be like, okay, so I just was traveling, right? And I ended up like, and this is not uncommon for me, is that people don't know how old I am. They think I'm much younger than I am, which is a compliment. And I think it's partially my energy too. But I was with this elderly woman named Alice who clearly did not know I was trans. And I was also with this elderly guy named Vic who I helped out too. Like if I'm traveling and I see someone who's older, who's having issues with the app or with their ticket, I'm always that person who goes up to them and says, "Can I help you?" I can't help it. It's in my blood. I'm just like one of those people. And I ended up befriending Alice and hanging out with her till she made her final leg of her trip. And the same with this guy, Vic. And neither one of them knew that I was trans. In spite of how I speak, I think they just thought I had a lower voice or whatever.
Yeah.
So I wasn't clocked, right?
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. But I was out at an open mic event 2 weeks ago, and I saw this trans male that I clocked. Who, you know, and as you know, as a trans male, like some trans males are short and, you know, so no, that can bring attention to themselves. Because, you know, typically cisgender women are typically shorter than most men. There's obviously exceptions.
Right.
But in this particular case, this male was probably 5'5". So he was a pretty short male. And he just had more delicate features. And, you know, he was kind of quiet. I clocked him. So anyway, I walked up to him and he had already heard me sing. We hit it off as you know, people. And he clocked me. It was the first thing he said. You know, so
I get that. When I worked at this place in North Carolina, there was this guy that I worked with, and you know, like sometimes before you get top surgery, you wear like a binder, you know, to like bind your chest or whatever. And I know what that shit looks like under your shirt. Like it's unmistakable because I'm like, okay, it's got the straps here. It's like only halfway down your back. And I was looking at him and I was like, that dude has a binder on. And then I didn't want to like say anything in front of people in case he didn't want anyone to know or whatever. But I was like, I've got to get this guy alone so I can be like, "Hey, we're the same," or whatever. It's like, "Hey, I've got one too, my guy. Like, what's up?" That's so funny.
You know, it's interesting. I think there's a different relationship that male transgender people have than female. Female transgender people tend to be much more competitive physically.
Interesting.
I find that I have fewer female trans friends and more male trans friends. Because there's, and I think it stems from the fact that the cisgender female community is so competitive that
For sure.
It's equally as competitive if you're a transgender woman. There are some trans women who fight that hard, and then there are others who kind of embrace it and say, well, I'm hot, so I want to like advertise how hot I am.
Right.
I'm kind of in the middle, you know, like I want to look good, and you know me, you could tell that I care how I look, and I try to look good. But at the same time, you know, I'm very out as being trans. And when I see another trans woman and I befriend them, I detect the competitiveness. And it is not typical that I ended up bonding with them, which is hard.
That's really interesting. I feel like you could do like a whole like breakdown of the dynamics of that. Like that I would be interested to watch like a documentary on the differences, because like in like with, you're right, with trans guys, like we like gravitate toward each other. It's like, oh my God, like look at us, we're the same. And I think it's just maybe because like cis men can be so aggressive and threatening that we like feel, I mean, not, I can't speak for the whole community, but like the need to kind of like prove our manliness or like whatever, which I don't. I paint my nails, I wear eyeliner, I don't give a shit. Like I'm gonna do what I want to do.
Right.
But I have found like I've met, and I even struggled with this in the beginning. It's like I have to work out, I have to be like the manliest man ever. And I'm like, why am I doing that? I'm doing that because that's what I think other people expect of me, when that's not necessarily the case at all. It's like I'm a man because I say I am, and because I know that I am, and because I feel that I am. And I can wear and dress however I want to. And so that's really interesting, like the different dynamics between like the trans male community and the trans female community.
It just like my cisgender female friends tend to wear, you know, are less conscious of what they wear and they look like than I am. You know, I go out, I'm judged much more harshly. At the same time, because I'm always on, you know, I always have to look good, even when I go work out or whatever, that... Yeah. You know, I get attention also that maybe I don't want. Like, I'll get more straight male attention, which is fine. Except I really still prefer women. And
right.
You know, or trans males. But I mostly prefer women. Yeah. I just, you know, cisgender men to me are really just so interested in, you know, getting laid. And that's not the most important part to me. So rather than dealing with that, I just kind of stay away from the situation.
So I have a question. So when you transitioned, where were you in your career wise? Like what were you doing at the time? Were you doing special effects? Were you doing music? Like at what did you, because I know for me, like when I transitioned, I kind of like burned all my bridges and started brand new. Cause I was like, I don't want to work with the same people. I don't want to do any of this. And maybe that was rooted in like fear. I don't know if it would be the same for me now, knowing what I know now, but I'm just curious, like what like your career looked like at the time.
Okay. So I'm going to go down this road because I think it's important that people hear this lesson, because this is probably not what you wanted to hear, because more people want to hear, you know, I transitioned and my life was like, you know, rainbows and unicorns, you know, and mine was not. So I was at the time I was divorced from my second wife. I was living in Memphis, Tennessee as the anaplastologist for the University of Tennessee. I had products on the market. I have 4 successful patents. I was the anaplastologist for St. Jude for the Veterans Administrative Hospital in Memphis. I'd been featured on CNN. I'd been featured on Inside Edition. My career was doing very well. Yeah. And I was dating this woman at the time who ultimately died of breast cancer. And it was in 2010.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. And when Debbie passed, before she passed away, I let her know that I was trans. Like I said to her, I said, would you stay with me if I transitioned? Mm-hmm. And she said, yes. And I was like, so excited that like I could actually do this and have support, you know? Yeah. And my ex didn't know. I have children, by the way, I have 2 children, and they didn't know. And I was the primary parent. So I was hiding the secret for a very long time. And so when I decided to transition, I was in a pretty dark place. I was very unhappy. I had a secret cocaine problem that I had taken from Hollywood. I'd worked in Los Angeles where on Buffy and Angel, instead of going to dinner, we went to our dealer. I was like the most functional Coke person ever. And it was horrible. And it was a very secret thing for me. Like, I didn't want people to know, because it wasn't like I was even enjoying it anymore.
Yeah.
It was more like I was just addicted. So I decided that it was time I made a change, and I got off cocaine and went to a psychologist, got a letter, and went on hormones. And wow. Lost weight, got in shape, started like caring how I, you know, felt about myself all over again. Like, I'm going to give myself a fresh start. And yeah. Anyone who transitioned knows there's this weird place that you're at where you look like you're not quite masculine, you're not quite feminine. You're kind of like Johnny Depp in that new version of Willy Wonka, where he's like, what is he supposed to be? You know what I mean? You're like, what the hell is that? You're just this androgynous weirdo. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. That's so funny.
So yeah. I looked like, as a matter of fact, I was dating this other woman at the time I was transitioning, and her son actually said I looked like Willy Wonka, and not knowing that.
Oh my God, brutal.
Because I was growing my hair out, and it was kind of looking page boyish at the time. And and I looked very effeminate, and my eyebrows were, you know, a little too metro for the average man. I definitely looked femme. And I had an intervention from friends who were like, what the hell's going on with you? Like, you look yeah. weird. You got to tell us. And I had to come out, you know. And so I had come out privately to friends. And one of my closest friends at the time told me this. And she said, I think it's a terrible idea what you're doing. I think you're going to lose your kids. You're going to lose your career. And she was right. Everything that she predicted happened. I was in Memphis, Tennessee, and even though Memphis is a very liberal part of Tennessee, mm-hmm. that didn't control the judges or the lawyers or my ex who had it in for me, who didn't, you know, really want me Absolutely. To succeed. So cutting to the chase here, I came out to the dean at the University of Tennessee that I was in transition and that my intent was to come out fully at a particular date. And he was very supportive of me and as a person. And I got a lot of support. That's but nice. Then when it came to the bathroom, there was a yeah. huge coup. And all these women at UT went to the dean's office saying they didn't want me using the bathroom and blah, blah, blah. And he basically threatened to fire all of them if they didn't shut up, which was awesome. And he was like my wow. biggest advocate. And Dr. Hoddle continues to be one of my closest friends and a great advocate. But what happened
That's
was
really all special.
Yeah. And he decided to retire. And when he was retiring, he warned me that the person who would be coming in didn't like me and had it out for me. And it was only about 2 weeks he was in his position that he sent me a resignation letter telling me that I had to leave. And that's
what year was this?
This was like, in 2015.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And,
that's really disappointing to hear.
It was horrific. This is a job I had been in for doing anaplastology for 18 years, been associated with the university for 10 of those years. And I was blown away and, I was losing my job. And at the same, very same time, my ex sent me a letter from her lawyer asking for an emergency petition to take away my children, claiming that my transition had adversely affected them because she intended to move to Colorado and she knew that I would block that. So all of a sudden I lost my career and I'm about to lose my children. And I couldn't get a lawyer because every lawyer I spoke to said, you're never going to win. So I was ended up representing myself, which was a complete clusterfuck. And I ended up losing my children, lost my career, and I fell into a very deep depression. And if it wasn't for the support of my friends and, you know, I don't know that I'd be here today. It was horrible. So without much hope at the time, I decided to do something fucking crazy. And I joined the Memphis Police Department. At 50 years old. I know this is completely nuts.
Your life story is like Forrest Gump. Like, it just keeps getting crazier.
I know. This is totally a true story, though. So
thank you for sharing that with me, though, by the way. Just to interject, like, I think it is important to hear everyone has a different story of their transition. And to hear that things were so difficult and to still be sitting here, to have met you and to be sitting here and having this conversation like you came out on top, and that's a really beautiful thing. So thank you for sharing that part of your story.
Oh, thanks, honey. Well, I think it's important, and I didn't want to give you a preview before you asked me, but I think it's important for people to know that, you know, you're going to lose people in your life as well as gain other things. I mean, there's things that I gained and things that I lost. I also, one of the people in my life who was not a supporter leaked my transition to my parents and to my brother. And they found out before I had a chance to tell them, and it didn't go well. I have no longer have a relationship with my father, and my mother and I were never very close, and that's a whole other story, but my brother and I were, you know, okay, and that's dead. You know, there was a lot of loss, but so anyway, getting back to the police department.
Right.
So I was really lost as to what I wanted to do with my life, and I didn't think I was going to be able to get back into doing anaplastology because I was trans, and I thought that I would have a similar problem. So I thought, well, what if I went into crime scene investigation? Because I look really cute in pantsuits, and, you know, I just love those shows.
That's my favorite thing you've said this whole time. That's going to be like the byline, but I look really cute in pantsuits.
So. Yeah, so I was like, I would look so cute with like a badge and a gun. And like, you know, I look a little like Mariska Hargitay anyway from, you know,
yes!
Law & Order. Could you see that? Could you see it a little
SVU
bit?
SVU is like, what? Listen, there is not an episode of SVU that I have not seen.
Can you see it a little bit? Problem. A little bit?
Yes, that's crazy. You do look like Mariska Hargitay.
So I was
love
like,
Olivia Benson in this house.
And so I had a bob at the time, so I looked even more like her. So it was very funny. So when I told everybody, like, yeah, I can see the Law & Order thing, you know? So, anyway, I ultimately tried out. There was no age requirement, which was crazy because I was 50 at the time. So, you know, I'm 54 now, which is crazy because no one believes I'm 54 years old, which is like,
yeah, no.
I'm in crazy shape for 54. So I had to try it at 50. I got in, which was remarkable. And I was the only trans person who ever tried out for the Memphis Police Department and the oldest person. So I'm in
breaking
there
records.
Getting You're my legend. Ass kicked every day, like physically, like this. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. And I hate guns, which is even harder.
Yeah.
So I'm about ready to graduate and I get this opportunity to be an anaplastologist in Buffalo for the Roswell Cancer Center. And I ended up taking it. So before graduation, I ultimately left to go to Buffalo, New York and join the Roswell Cancer Center. My teachers thought it was a good idea. They all were like, listen, Maddie, we think you're a wonderful person, but you're not designed to be a police officer.
The pantsuit was short-lived, but that's okay. It had its moment.
Yeah, well, you know, the bullet-resistant vest made me look really fat, and that was a problem for me.
Oh, no.
So I really didn't like that. I actually asked them if they had a more slimming version, but yeah, that didn't go over well. It's a very different mentality. You know, most police officers have had multiple fistfights in their lives and they like guns and they're pretty aggressive. And I'm not really one of those people. But at the same time, that job saved my life because I was in a dark place. And if I didn't have to literally have all my focus put in one place just to graduate or to get close to graduating, I would have. Who knows what I would have done? Because I've never been suicidal until that moment when I lost my kids and I lost my job. And I felt like my identity was so tied to those two things. And it was just too much loss at one time. And having to invest all my energy in learning to shoot and fight and learn the law and just recovering physically and having to run. And I mean, it was very hard. And as I said, in a lot of ways, that whole experience saved my life. So
yeah, no, I understand having something to like focus your energy on that totally makes sense. So you moved to Buffalo?
So I did. I moved to Buffalo and have you ever seen The Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah.
Okay. So Buffalo is the planet Hoth and I had to disembowel a tauntaun and wrap myself in its intestines to stay warm in the morning. Oh, I'm just kidding. And but I did have to emotionally prepare to leave my car every day because it was so fucking cold.
Yeah.
And I really hated it. It was, and it was right when the pandemic hit. I was being furloughed and I was like, I do not want to stay in Buffalo during this. So I decided I wanted to move back to Los Angeles and see if I could get a gig in anaplastology, but at least I had all my effects connections still intact.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I moved back to LA and ended up getting back into special effects. And that's what I've been for the last 2 years. And until recently, when I have another chance now to get back into anaplastology, which I'm extremely right. excited about. But I've been really fortunate. I worked on American Horror Stories, and I worked on Aquaman 2, the new version of Salem's Lot, which is coming out. I worked on Stranger Things. I've been working on Doom Patrol and The Boys and Teen Titans. I've been really That's fortunate. So I've done a lot of stuff in like 2.5 years. So.
I know a lot of like people that listen to this podcast are going to freak out about the fact that you worked on Stranger Things and The Boys. I can't believe you did American Horror Story. That is wild to me. Like, what was some of the stuff that like, how did I just this, the world of special effects is so intriguing to me, but I know so little about it. Like, you were like literally like using your hands to create this shit. Like, that is incredible to me. Like, what was your favorite experience in what you've done in the last like 2 years?
Okay. So, you know, my skill set really evolved a lot doing anaplastology, and I became really good at making eyes. And right. because I worked in maxillofacial prosthetics, you know, I worked along all these dentists and stuff. I became good at making teeth too. So I ended up doing a lot of like fake heads and fake body work. And like, I just worked on this new version of Salem's Lot, which is a Stephen King project you're going to see coming out. And I worked on all the veneers. So all the fangs, I worked on like 22 pairs of fangs, and I worked on like,
oh my God,
all the stunt fangs. And then for American Horror Stories, which is the anthology show that I did like Paris Jackson's fake head, and I did like the Santa Claus severed head, and I did,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Did you see that? And the head on top of the Christmas tree. I did that.
That's
and,
gnarly. I love it.
And I did all the body parts on the Christmas tree. And then I worked on this new Timothy Chalamet. Timothy Chalamet? How do you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, I worked on this new cannibal movie that's coming out that he did.
And I want to see that. That's
I worked
cool.
on a bunch of stuff for that. It's really sick. Really sick stuff.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And then I worked on this Martin Scorsese movie that's coming out about these Native American women that were killed that I did two bodies for. I worked on, which you're going to see also. So I did a lot of eyes and teeth and silicone fabrication. A lot of mold making, casting, that kind of stuff. Everyone's kind of got their niche in the biz, you know, of like what they're good at. A lot of good sculptors. In anaplastology, I do it all. Like, you'll sculpt it and mold it and paint it and everything else. But in this case, because, you know, I had just re-entered the field, I kind of had to like use what my special skills were that were better than everybody else to kind of get back in. Mm-hmm. And because of Absolutely. That, I, you know, that became like the thing I was gravitating toward.
Do you feel like more pressure when you're doing anaplastology or when you're doing special effects? Because I imagine like with anaplastology, it's like this is going to, you know, be a part of someone's body, whereas special effects, it's like you've got the pressure of like the crew wanting it to look right or whatever. Like, do you feel differently when you're doing it for one as opposed to the other?
Actually, I think that they're both high pressure jobs. In special effects, I mean, you're not allowed to screw up. Basically, if you screw up, you're right. fired. And, you know, in special effects, you know, I was like, I would say there's a lot of ageism. It's really a young person's field. So getting back into it at my age was tough because, you know, I didn't come from the cosplay world and I didn't learn on YouTube. And I wasn't into anime. And also, you know, even though I was kind of cool because I was trans, I was uncool because I was like I call it a glam butch look. You know, if you've seen me, you know, I my hair and my makeup's always kick ass. But at the same time, I work out a lot. So I'm muscular, as you know, and I care how I.
Oh yeah, you would like kick my ass, but look great while you did it. So like,
that, exactly, that's the plan.
Yeah.
Right. So you know, a lot of these people were not in good shape, and they, you know, even the trans people that I met in special effects, you know, they kind of looked at me as, in the most horrible way, they would go, "Oh, you're like a Caitlyn Jenner trans woman," which was like a really horrible dude. Thing to say.
And I was tomato, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, "Fuck you." And then, and they were like, "No, it's just that, you know, you're so into your looks and blah, blah, blah." And I was like, you know, there are a lot of trans women who like how they look. That doesn't make them Caitlyn Jenner trans. So fuck you.
Yeah, right. Also, you can look however the hell you want. Whose business is that anyway but yours?
Well, like, I think it's more they were just jealous because I, you know, looked good and I cared how I looked and I took care of myself. But here
and
there.
Super talented. They were, yeah, they were threatened by you for sure.
But in anapostology, it's a different kind of pressure. Well, firstly, I'm trans. And ultimately, the person I'm working with will figure that out. They usually don't know right off the bat. It's usually they figure it out. But at that point, right. They've already liked me, so they get over it. Do you know what I mean? That yeah, happens absolutely. A lot. And while I'm there, I'm going to tell you a good story. So I worked with this woman from Mississippi, much older woman, and they were from a very wealthy family in Mississippi. And I did her nose, and her daughter, who was also a very wealthy woman, used to accompany her mother to all the, you know, appointments. So I've been doing her nose for a couple of years. And then, you know, I already moved to Los Angeles. I get a message on Facebook saying, "Hey, I think you worked on my grandmother. I wanted to talk to you." And I said, "Okay." So I reached back out and he says, "Listen, you don't know me, but believe it or not, I'm trans." And I'm like, "Oh, wow. Okay. And he goes, "You know, so my family disowned me when I came out as trans, but after my grandmother had worked with you for so long and my mother got to know you and how much good you did for her, they re-embraced me. And now I have a relationship with my family. And it wouldn't have been if it weren't for the relationship you
Maddie,
had."
Maddie, that's incredible.
Right?
Wow.
So it makes me cry every time I tell the story.
I know. I'm like trying not to be like crying on the chat. Like,
right? So it was like really special. And I guess what I'm saying is like I have this pressure of representing my community as a practitioner to people that might not ordinarily have had any interaction with the trans community. I have the pressure to deliver a product that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And those two things are a whole different kind of pressure, right?
Absolutely.
Than the pressure I felt to keep my gig in an effects world where I'm too old and not hip enough. Do you know what I mean? So it's just different, you know?
Nah, all they have to do is spend like 5 minutes in a room with you. Like, come on, that's crazy.
Well,
it is so inspiring. Like, I'm just so thrilled that you're sharing the story. Like, I just feel like so many people that are going to listen to this need to hear this. So that's incredible.
Aww,
and I'm sure
that
meant a lot to you.
Yeah. So like, you know, you have your good and you have your bad. I mean, you know, I go through my times like everybody else. Like, right now for me is, you know, finding someone as a partner is really tough because, you know, I still really prefer women. You know, a lot of people don't understand that like most men who transition to become trans women don't necessarily change their proclivity in terms of what they prefer sexually, you know, because the sex and gender are obviously completely different. And I think most people assume that if you're a transgender woman that you want to be with a man, and that isn't necessarily true. I still prefer women, except that, you know, if you just look at my picture, you won't know that I'm trans. So very often if I go on a dating site, people will skip over the part where I say trans and they just, you know, say fine. And then I go out on a date with a trans woman and then they find out, I mean, I'm sorry, with a lesbian, and they find out and they're like, Ooh, I don't know how I feel about dating a trans woman. So, you know, it's tough. I would say dating as a trans woman is extremely hard.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Not that it isn't as a trans male, just to be clear. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. No. I can't even speak on that. I am an anomaly. Like, I've been with the same girl since I was 16, which is kind of interesting. Back to your point, I was the same way, but the opposite. Like, I grew up thinking that I was a lesbian, basically, or that's at least the way that people perceived me. Like, I've always been attracted to women. And so I was like fighting or like struggling with the thought of people thinking I was gay. And I was like, that just doesn't feel right. Like, I am attracted to women, but I don't feel like I am a gay woman or a lesbian. And then I transitioned and I was like, oh, here we go. This makes sense. But now when Katie and I go out, everyone, like when we go to Pride events or any sort of like LGBT, like, you know, festivals or whatever, people just think that we're like straight people just there hanging out. And I'm like, no, like, I'm trans. Katie's pansexual. Like, we totally fit into this mold.
You know, I didn't like, even think about it.
Frustrating in a whole different way.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even, that's like something I wouldn't even have thought of. That's really interesting to me. I would have assumed they thought you were her gay male friend.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Fair. Roast me. Like, I do talk a lot with my hands, okay? Like, I know.
Well, you're a hot guy and you're slender, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
And you wear your nails painted and you have dyed hair and you know what I mean.
I do get hit on by more gay men than anything else. Like, West Hollywood's always a good time for me. I drink for free like all night long.
Yeah, you're a gay man we'll call a twinkie, right?
Yeah.
Right, you're totally a twink.
I have heard that 1,000 times. That is right. So funny. Hey, whatever. I'm embracing it. That's cool with me. So, I have no qualms. Anybody can hit on me. I have no problem with it.
Like, that's so funny. I was going to say, I had a friend, Bradley, who was a twink. And I used to go to this gay bar in Memphis all the time. I was the queen of the gay bar. Thank you. And
hell yeah.
And I used to go there a lot. And I would end up actually dating a lot of gay males there who – I didn't think I would be into men. Like, my proclivity kind of changed, I think, being on hormones so long. So I decided to like to see what happened, you know, and I would like just, we just fool around or whatever. But anyway, I just remember my friend Brad, he was a twink and he like taught me all the terms, like, you know, like cub and bear and bear, he was like telling me all these terms, and I was like, he's like, and I'm a twink, and I'm like, so I go, if you get fat, does that make you an expired twinkie?
Oh my god.
So, and he just, so that became a running gag that like he put on some weight and he goes, I'm an expired twinkie.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah,
oh my god. Well, we've got like 5 minutes left in this wonderful discussion we've been having. So what's next for you? What are you working on right now? How's life treating you in this moment?
Well, I've been really fortunate. I've loved the music community here in Los Angeles. And in the band I was in the 90s, we briefly touched, you know, it was pretty successful. And I played the Strip and all these wonderful places. And coming out as a trans singer-songwriter, I just headlined an event at the North End a couple of Sundays ago. And I play all around town as myself. And, you know, if I play with other people, it's still Maddie Singer as the solo artist.
Right.
And anyone who's interested can friend me on Instagram at Maddie Singer Music at Instagram. And
hell yeah.
And, you know, I sing at karaoke at Backstage in Culver City. If you want to check me out, which is the best. Yeah, the best karaoke in Los Angeles is Backstage. And I'm not connected with them, but they really are the best karaoke place. And that's what I've been doing. So, I play around town and I'm about to work bi-coastally in New York and in Los Angeles. So I'm excited to get to know my Brooklyn-based friends there and kind of re-embrace my New York roots. So
that's like the dream, going back and forth from New York to LA. Like, people live their whole life wanting to do something like that.
I'm pretty lucky. I will tell you though, travel is always, it always reminds you why you don't like, you know, flying. It's not so much the turbulence or anything like that. It's always the, we're having a little mechanical problem and we're going to be on the ground for 6 hours. So
right. Also, gosh, I don't know if it's the same for you, so I don't want to speak on your behalf, but for me, like, I had to learn, like, traveling as a trans person, it's a hit or a miss. Like, sometimes they don't bother me at all. Other times they want to, like, do, like, a basically full body search and look in my ass crack. I'm like, why am I setting off all of the the alarms?
No, that's so where weird. I know I pass well, because I never get anything.
Damn, I mean, that's lucky.
Well, on my driver's license, it has a female pronoun. I look like my driver's
that's
license.
Cool.
Yeah, because in LA and California, you can just pick the pronoun of your choice.
gosh. Well, you and I should talk later about that because mine still says female and I hate that shit.
But you need to get it changed and you can do it at
the DMV. I didn't know that was an option. Like from the South, they're like, yeah, fuck you. That's never happening. Like you're, so that's cool to know. Wow.
Yeah. Like really cool. Yeah. Gender markers make a big difference. So
absolutely. And even so when I go to buy a vape at the store, they're like, wait, what? I'm like, leave me alone. Like, just give it to me.
Yeah. I just put on my Valley Girl voice. I go, hi, it's nice to meet you. I talk like that. And it's fantastic. You have to put on that voice like you're Khloe Kardashian. Talk like that. So,
I'm glad the airport isn't a struggle for you. Well, now I'm gonna bother you about that later so that I can go fly.
You can count on it. I'll hook you up.
Yes. So, I wanted to ask you one more thing. You do like casting for like American Idol, right? Is that something you can talk about?
I did. I was fortunate enough to work with a company called Duran Ophir Casting. And I worked for almost 2 months doing casting for American Idol. And it was a blast. I met all these wonderful young people and listened to a lot of audio and video of people. And it was so much fun. And I got to scout all around Los Angeles, which was totally fun too. And it was really cool to go, I'm with American Idol. And basically give someone an opportunity, and you know what, a bunch of them are going to be on the show. So it's really exciting to know that if anything happens that I would have some, part in potentially helping them with their career. So.
Absolutely. No, it's always cool to like give back with the talented, like younger people. Even when I go to like shows and I see like high school kids playing rock music and they're really good, I'm like, hell yeah. Like, don't stop. Like, keep it up. That's so sick.
100%. And today there's so many queer musicians that I play with regularly. It's like the field is inundated with queer. I would say absolutely. There's probably more queer musicians than straight musicians out there now.
Yeah. Hell yeah. We're going to take over.
I think we already have. 10 years. We pretty much
we're going to weed them all out. Yeah.
Well, it was just a question of time before we dominated. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that's real. Queer musicians have always been there, but it is cool to see it be a little bit more mainstream. So
yeah, and androgyny has always been hot in music. I mean, David Bowie, I mean, all the rockers from like the 80s and 90s all had that, bi looking, when I say bi, I mean like, a non-binary look,
Yeah, absolutely.
So, being non-binary queer looking is still a very in. So.
Absolutely. We're the hottest. We know it. Like,
Duh.
We love to make people feel confused about what they're attracted to.
Oh, 100%. And it's funny too, is because I think, I think the people are really fascinated. I think that there is a fetishization of it and it will continue. And I think anyone who dates a trans person knows that the difficulty is that if you date males and you're a trans woman, is that there's always the danger that you're just a fetish to them. And that's another reason why I have an aversion to dating straight males, because I just don't want to be a fetish,
Absolutely. No, you're a person and you deserve to be like loved and treated as a partner and not just something that's like this, like a sexual being. I completely understand that.
Right. They have great toys today. Go get one, So.
Yeah. Right. That's hilarious. Well, thank you so much, Maddie. This has been such a pleasure. I'm sure that I will see you in person very soon, but you taking the time to do this with me really means a lot. Like, I knew that when I met you that you were a really cool person, and to get to pick your brain for an hour straight uninterrupted has been fantastic. So
this has
so
been
much.
Really fun, Tate, and I'm glad I could do it, and you're awesome, and so it was my pleasure.
Oh, thank you so, so, so much. All right, you've been listening to Punk Goes Pride. I am Tate Logan, and we will see you next week. Have a good one.